The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
We need a revolution. There's only one.
Hello and welcome to the revolution, to the peaceful, healthy revolution, the Liberty Hour on Inform Life Radio on 1150 AM KKNW and streaming today to CHD TV and other platforms. I'm your host, Bernadette Pager. The views expressed in this hour, as that little blip said earlier, are not necessarily those of CHD or KKNW, and we're not giving legal or medical advice, just great conversation to help you live an informed life. This hour of radio is brought to you by Inform Choice Washington, or rather I should say the members of Inform Choice Washington. If this is the first time you've heard about us, go to informchoicewa.org, check it out, sign up to get action alerts and the newsletter from that great organization that really is focused on protecting your rights to make your own informed decisions, especially in the avenue of healthcare. And if you'd like to give a little something every month to keep free speech on the air, we'd so much appreciate it because this show is 100% funded by donations from members of Informed Choice Washington. So in this hour today, we've got Bob Reynolds and Dr. Javier Figueroa joining me. And I think what we're going to do is maybe start this hour with some, I'm going to pick Javier's brain. So he's got this great Substack that he's been posting things on. And I want to go down in the rabbit hole a bit on some of these topics he's been covering. And then I think as we move, Bob, toward the second half of the hour, you said Aaron Kranzler, a great advocate in Eastern Washington, maybe joining us to give some information. And I want to get updates from you on some initiatives in Washington State, as well as the CHD RV events coming up. Okay, excellent. I think that'll be our format here. So Javier, let's just dive right in. You know, when I made the cover.
Go.
first I have to present and go grab it. When we make it like a separate cover for the, where do I have it there? Let me see. Share this. Here we go. You stream. Right? Nah, I can't think and talk and click at the same time. It's like patting your head and rubbing your stomach sometimes.
There you go.
I almost put a toilet seat on the cover of this just for fun. It would have been grabbed people's attention a little bit, but the title of this intrigued me. The CDC responds to my questions about wastewater surveillance. So tell us, Javier, what the heck is going on with the CDC and them checking what's coming out of our households and going into the wastewater?
Well, this is a project that I think for the past 40 years, public health systems have been using to basically assess the level of pathogens or drugs or chemicals that are in the sewer systems. And so what you do is you go to a local municipality that has wastewater processing and you take a sample and then you run tests on it. And depending on how good your tests are or how well you process your samples, you can get an idea of what's in circulation. Now, if you're trying to just assess whether or not a particularly virulent disease is going through your system, how long it lasts, that's a good way of, you know, it's a reasonable way of doing it. But when you have a system that now can surveil 40% of the entire U.S. population without their knowledge and get information on, you know, prescription drugs, illicit drug use, whether or not, and in some cases, whether or not you've been vaccinated or are actively in a vaccination post-vaccination for whatever particular course schedule you're on, though, that's the sort of information you can derive from it. So again, for me, it is an invasion of privacy at a community level.
Good heavens. And how, let's say, are they testing in a small enough community that they can get somewhat microscopic about this, right?
They can.
Or so get it down to the neighborhood or the...
Well, with 1,500 sites that are actively being monitored, you don't have that much. Well, actually, you do have that much granularity. You can have a fairly sophisticated understanding at the community level, but you really can't. Like, for example, can you determine which household? No, but you can figure out which neighbors or neighborhood has a particular active infection, or someone's taking, or there's a whole community-wide use of methamphetamines or things like that. You can actually get information about what's going on in those neighborhoods.
So it seems like anything that mankind can invent for good, they can very easily harness for bad.
Right.
And I can see a lot of good with being able to, look to see where disease is, and in a modern life, how toxic are the waterways becoming,
right,
with all of the prescriptions being flushed down the toilet, either just straight down the toilet or through you and then into the toilet. But either way, it gets to the fish and gets into the environment. Toxic runoffs, what you're spraying on your lawn. I think it can be really a good indicator of the health in many ways of our society. So I don't think it's anything I would ever want to give up. But it does seem, let's say something like ivermectin, like if they made something that's very life-saving, like ivermectin, decided they wanted to ban it, they might be able to see which communities are using it by looking at the water.
And the question really becomes, what is the purpose of wastewater surveillance at a community level or at a national level? What is the problem they're trying to solve when you have wastewater surveillance? And they always say, well, we're monitoring for the potential to detect pathogens, before they happen. Well, okay, if there's a pathogen in circulation and you don't see an increase in hospital visits or prescriptions for, a particular drug to fight against the symptoms, what are you actually looking for? I mean, it's like for me, the whole purpose of my my post was, this is an excuse generating machine for the national system. Fine, you can detect something in the wastewater, polio, okay, great, or SARS-CoV-2, fine, flu, okay. Why? You have all the data coming in from your already established healthcare services. Well, the claim is, it's because in underserved communities, they might not be noted in the health records, or they don't report it if it's a reportable disease. Again, if it's a small community and it's isolated, the chances of it spreading are minimal to none.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically just an excuse to say, hey, we want to monitor what's going on there, because now if we see a spike in whatever thing we're wanting to detect, we have the ability, thanks to the new laws that are in place, to declare a public health emergency.
Oh, good heavens.
On the basis of, we detected something that was unusually high.
It detected in the wastewater. And, it used to be that something had to be highly lethal, highly transmissible, and truly something dangerous, like smallpox outbreaks or something, before public health would step in and start impinging on our freedoms.
That's right.
But now all it takes is one case of polio, one case of measles, and the emergency situation is like locked and loaded,
Correct.
And so it's exactly like you said. It wasn't like a year or so ago, we were saying, oh, everybody panicked, they found polio in the wastewater in New York City. And it's like, but because the vaccine that is given now does not actually prevent infection or transmission, because it's still, but we have flushable toilets, It is going to be in our wastewater, but nobody's getting sick because we don't have open sewers. And we Correct. Tend to wash our hands after we go. You know, so, you know, it's like you said, it's a great excuse because public health and especially the pharmaceutical industry, they want us to panic.
Correct.
Over insignificant numbers. I mean, like the Mpox, as they now call it. There was a global public health emergency declared over that, and there were so few cases. And, you know, I was thinking the other day about that in particular. So, like, why really did they do this? And I think it was another test run.
Yeah.
How can we, and one of the things I think that most infuriated me, because I tried to talk about the dangers of the Mpox vaccine, which is under the countermeasures program, the PrEP Act, you can't sue for it. It's very dangerous. High levels of myocarditis, just like the COVID shots. It doesn't prevent transmission. There's a lot of dangers with this shot, but because Mpox was being spread in communities where they were blaming certain sexual behaviors for how it was being transmitted, I felt like they were testing it on a market where nobody cared if they got hurt, honestly. And, you know, I kept trying to raise it, you know, the question of this is a dangerous, it's experimental, are people getting informed consent? But it was really hard to get our community really loud about this. They're pushing this. And I think they knew that. And because of that, they were able to test a somewhat untested vaccine in the population.
That's
and now
right.
they sort of know what this Mpox vaccine can do because it's also prescribed for smallpox.
See, that's, and again, there's zero evidence that it has any protection against smallpox. Again, how are you going to test for it? Well, mm-hmm. titers are not good substitutes for preventing infection. The other thing that we have to remember is that there is now, so one of the great concerns that I have about this wastewater surveillance program, and it's not just in the United States, it's, you know, most developed nations have a wastewater surveillance program mm-hmm. that the CDC funds.
Mm.
So most of the data goes to the CDC so that you can actually assess what's going on, not only in the United States, but globally. Now, again, if your threshold is set so low to where the head of the Department of Health and Health and Human Services, the only thing he has to do, and here's, I'm going to take a little quote here. I think I've got it right here. Where are you? This will just give me one moment. Here's the other one. There is a law in the books right now that reads in a very worrying way.
Federal or state?
This is federal.
Okay.
At the federal level. And this has to do with the ability of the Secretary of Health and Human Services to declare an emergency by consulting public health officials. And it doesn't have to be an active infection. It just has to be an outbreak of a pathogen. So that outbreak of a pathogen, the language is, as we put it, very clear, outbreak of a pathogen, not a infectious disease. And that is very,
outbreak of a pathogen. So it could be something
in the wastewater. See, so that's the language you have to be very careful with.
Wow.
And then the other thing that we have to remember is that as part of, when Ronald Reagan signed into law a one particular section. Where is it? Yes. And this comes through courtesy of Catherine Watt at Bailiwick News. Executive Order 12452, listing communicable diseases subjecting citizens to forcible apprehension and detention under Health and Human Services Secretary's Quarantine Authority through Public Health Service Act, including cholera or suspected cholera, diphtheria, infectious tuberculosis, plague, suspected smallpox, yellow fever, and suspected viral hemorrhagic fever, Lassa, Marburg, Ebola, Congo, Crimea, and others not yet isolated or named. Now, get this. there is now a vaccine against Ebola, Zaire. And it's already been released. It comes from Merck, and people, the health professionals in Colorado, in the Denver Public Health System, have been given this vaccine. And it is a live virus. It's not Ebola, but it's basically an engineered virus that expresses one portion of the Ebola glycoprotein.
Is it an mRNA vaccine?
It's a live virus, so that it actively replicates inside the body.
Okay, so it's expressing that particular one. Your body's not making it. Okay,
correct. And what happens is that it has a 30%. So there's a 30% chance that if you take the shot, you can infect another person with the live virus, so it can spread. And get this: if you have the right test for wastewater surveillance, you can trigger that, oh my God, there's Ebola in the wastewater.
Why are they giving, who again is, are they giving it to, and what's their reason for giving it to them?
They didn't. So one is that in Denver, in a populated metropolitan area, there is a BSL-3 biosafety lab BSL-3 facility that handles Ebola virus.
Okay.
So they gave the frontline workers these vaccines just in case there's an outbreak, so they don't succumb to a hemorrhagic fever.
In case there's a lab leak, they're going to give people an experimental brand new shot that can actually spread the disease they're trying to avoid.
Well, actually, it doesn't spread the disease.
Okay.
It has a portion of the glycoprotein. So the idea is to immunize a person to recognize one portion of the virus, which is the equivalent of the spike protein.
Which we saw how dangerous it is to make your body just react to one portion of a virus.
Exactly. But again, if it's a live virus, it'll replicate, it'll spread to other people. And if you're doing wastewater surveillance, all of a sudden you're going to see a steady increase in the amount of this particular virus protein that you have a test to look for.
So they generally use some sort of virus that's fairly common when they do
Correct.
This sort of vaccine. Yep. What virus did they use? Did they hijack?
So they use a vesicular stomatitis virus, which is...
Never heard of that.
VSV, it causes gastrointestinal, it causes diarrhea. But what they do is they replace a portion of the envelope glycoprotein of VSV, and they put in the envelope glycoprotein of the Zaire Ebola virus. Hmm. So it actually expresses a protein of Ebola virus, while it's just the VSV virion itself. Mm-hmm. So again, it replicates. There's a 30% chance if you get the shot that you're going to infect someone in your household because you shed.
Mm-hmm.
It's from Merck. Wow. Yeah, and it's in Post 29. And this has been handed out, and Bob sent us the link to it here in the chat, that, yeah, University of Colorado has basically given these shots to medical care workers as a prophylactic measure.
Was it voluntary?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm sure that the Colorado workers took it when they were told that, hey, this is just in case down the street, if we get a release, you guys are protected because you're going to have to be taking care of people that are coming in with hemorrhagic fever.
So is this Merck vaccine an emergency use authorized? Is it experimental? Is it licensed?
It's licensed because it is a traditional vaccine, that it's made out of a virus, a attenuated virus. It, you know, and again, more than likely, and it had quite a bit of testing done on it.
Okay.
So it wasn't as rushed as the COVID virus or the COVID jabs. But it is worrisome because, again, wastewater surveillance has traditionally been used to assess polio outbreaks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what triggers high levels of poliovirus when you test for in wastewater?
What?
When you vaccinate a population of children against the polio virus.
Does that show up even the inactivated one that's given in the US, that gets it in the wastewater too?
Yes. And it depends on, I mean, you will get some replication, even with inactivated virus, you will get some, but again, they're trying to move towards the activated or the attenuated polio vaccine because it, quote, elicits a stronger antibody response.
Yeah. Well, so, and what they've got going on now, they've kind of made a bit of a mess because in Africa, the its vaccine escaped. It has gone wild. The vaccine strain has now gone wild. And they know that you can't stop something with a vaccine that does not prevent infection and transmission and only reduces symptoms. It's going to be in the wastewater. It's going to get around. It's going to go wild. And then you have to go back to the live one, which is more reactogenic and more dangerous and will cause more paralysis. And so they're in a vicious circle. If you have an imperfect flawed product, you're going to have imperfect flawed responses and make a mess. And we need to go back to the first hour of our program and just make sure everybody's got the building blocks of health so that if they're exposed to any virus, their bodies know what to do and they can recover and get natural immunity, which is always broader, durable.
Correct. That's exactly it.
You know, if properly supported. And so, you know, listeners can tell like the two of the topics we sort of promoted for today was what's in the wastewater that the CDC is surveilling. And the other is where do public health emergencies come from? And that's what we're talking about right now, Javier, is, you know, how you can just create instantly an emergency by looking at what's in the wastewater and saying, we need to panic. We need to stop this before it happens.
Again, that's exactly it. And the threshold is so low. It really is low. If you have a public health official that basically says, hey, we detected this, it is of concern. And the secretary of at HHS says, I agree with you. Guess what? Now we're adding another public health emergency of, you know, national or international concern because we detected it in this wastewater surveillance system.
And this is really some of the dangerous stuff we saw with COVID so blatantly, where our rights were violated because of fear of what might happen.
Correct.
You must wear a mask, you must get a vaccine, or you can't visit grandma because you might infect her, even though you're not currently sick. There was no, you know, anytime you violate somebody's fundamental rights to freedom, you're supposed to be able to have your day in court for them to prove that you are actually a danger to society. But what they want now is to say there's something out there. You're a potential dangerous society, so we're taking away your rights while this potential exists. And I mean, this is like the scariest war ever on the human population.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, the whole purpose of this, like you said, is an excuse generating machine. The reason I entitled that particular post is, Mommy, where do public health emergencies come from? It is just basically, it comes from basically anyone who wants to point the finger at a public health surveillance system and say, there's your public health emergency right there. Again, excuse generating machine.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
Well, just as few of cases of anything now that they claim to be an emergency, measles, one case is a health emergency, according to them. And a major outbreak to them is 20 cases. Wow. But what about the one in 25 or 30 kids who has autism?
Again, where's that's not a public health emergency, right?
Why isn't that a public health emergency? All the other neurological injuries that our children are experiencing today. What about all the food allergies that is an epidemic? Why isn't that an emergency? Well, we know very well why. It's because these things are iatrogenically caused for the most part. Some of it is environmental. You know, there's a lot of things to blame for the harm of our children.
Right.
But that does not make them billions with what the response to it. This does. It's
And one last thing I need to state on this is that all of this is part of a coordinated effort with the World Health Organization that's mm-hmm. integrating itself not only with FDA, but also with USDA. And it's part of what it's called the One Health approach.
Oh, yes.
So One Health is basically trying to integrate everything from animals to humans mm-hmm. into a network of biological surveillance for just about anything. So for example, mm-hmm. recently a dairy farmer was diagnosed with bird flu. And so they're going to call the entire herd because that one person was diagnosed with bird flu, or mm-hmm. they detected bird flu in a chicken poultry farm or a poultry farm, and they're going to have to kill, you know, basically eliminate that entire stock of chickens. This is all part of the integrated One Health approach, where they're going to try and say, we're detecting something, we're taking drastic action now. Well, if you're a corporation, like say, I don't know, someone who owns fake meat production or fake milk production, or who likes to make, you know, artificial foods, and you want to cut down your competitor on natural food, that's a great way to make sure you can wipe out your competitor at some point. Or if someone's not being compliant in a particular region of the world or of a state, you start cutting down their food supply and drive up their food prices. So this is just one more control mechanism. And again, you cannot trust these people because there is zero transparency. No one's mm-hmm. telling you the truth. And when you don't have transparency, you do not have truth. And if you don't have truth, you cannot trust, period.
No, you there's no transparency, and so no accountability and no responsibility for poor outcomes, right? It's just, I mean, that's why so much is going wrong today. People do not behave well in the absence of responsibility. Now, right. I recently have learned about this. I think it's been around for a little while. It's called the Sovereignty Coalition. So I thought I'd pull this up. I know that Children's Health Defense is either belongs to this or supports this. I apologize that I'm very new. It's this sovereigntycoalition.org. But they're really pushing everybody to get involved in all levels on exiting the WHO.
Yes.
And here we have the American Sovereignty Declaration. We don't have time today to go really thoroughly through this, but maybe we'll bring a guest on very soon to talk about this.
And James Roguski, his newsletter, James Roguski has been at the forefront of trying to get people in front of the international health regulations and the pandemic treaty and the World Health Organizations. That guy has got so much information on the reality of how truly, truly tyrannical and corrupt all of these amendments are, mm-hmm. all of these negotiated treaties are. You mm-hmm. cannot... You cannot trust any of this going on in the WHO. And
no.
I used to be a proponent of the WHO until I actually started looking into their financials and who's supporting them. And I realized, dear God, this is fascistic and corporatistic to the extreme.
Fascist. That's hard to say. Yeah, you are so right. So sovereigntycoalition.org, check it out. And as I said, I'm new to it. I'm going down the rabbit hole myself, and we'll bring somebody on soon to talk about that. So Javier, thank you so much for those two posts and more. Tell everybody where your Substack is.
XavierFigueroa.substack.com. And I apologize if I dropped out any loose language during the radio show. But this, you really have to watch out for what's being offered to you, which is incomplete documents. For example, the pandemic treaty, they're giving people documents that are months old that haven't been updated. And they're trying to do a switcheroo where the new edited documents are going to be ratified without people reviewing them.
Yeah, it's very concerning. But, you know, I have faith in the goodness of humans and overall, there's more good ones than bad ones. The bad ones have all the power, right? Not all the power, but we can do this. Let's stick together, be tenacious. If we all do a little bit every day and pick our path where our passion is and support that part of this peaceful revolution that we're doing, I believe we're going to make it. So thank you so much, Javier. So we're going to move next in the next half hour here, talk about kind of some things going on in Washington State. I see that Aaron is here and I'm going to bring Aaron on. Hi, Aaron from Spokane region. Welcome. And I'm going to bring Bob Reynolds on as well. Bob, are you ready to pop in? Let's see if you're available. Yay.
Ready to go, Bernadette. Thanks for having us.
Oh, yes, you for having us. You bet. So Aaron, let's do some talking here. Bob, why don't you begin by giving a little overview of what's going on with the CHDRV, the vax versus unvax coming to Washington State. And then Aaron, you could tell us about your portion of the event that's going to be there in Spokane. Go ahead, Bob.
Right, thanks. So Children's Health Defense, they started earlier last fall, and they've got an RV traveling across the U.S., visiting many, many states, and they're conducting the people's study. And so we need to understand that there's a lot of studies that haven't been completed by the CDC, and things that are pretty obvious where vax-unvax studies have not been formally done. They have not looked at the health outcomes of people who have taken a different approach to their health. And there's a book written by Brian Hooker that is pretty much the theme for the entire story.
Yes.
For the entire tour is Vax, yeah. Vax, Let the Science Speak. And again, Brian Hooker will be with our bus in, sorry, I keep calling it a bus because it was at one point, but it truly is an RV. It's been wrapped with a custom wrap called Vax on Vax that people study. And there are signatures of thousands of people who've been injured by vaccines who have either been interviewed or just come by the RV. And so we've got a schedule coming around Washington to go get your interview taken on the RV.
Yeah. And I just want to say that while the federal government, the CDC, HHS, has not done a vax-unvax study to really show the impact of their mass vaccination programs that have been going on for 60 years, there are studies out there that are published. And that's what this book, Vax Unvax, Let the Science Speak, is all about. Dr. Brian Hooker and Bobby Kennedy Jr. went through all the published science and they found wherever they could studies, parts of studies that actually compared vaccinated versus unvaccinated and put them all in one place for everybody to see. We need more of these sort of studies to really get to the heart of what vaccines do, all the unintended consequences of them. So I just wanted to point that out. And then some of the data being gathered on this RV tour from vaccinated families who have experienced injury, unvaccinated families who have good health, putting all of that information together, gathering that. So go ahead.
Right. And so they're coming up through Oregon and they have daily stops every other day. And we're looking forward to meeting with Polly Tommy, who will be conducting all the interviews, I believe.
Yeah.
And so we'll have a stop in Olympia on April 16th. That's a Tuesday. And we just have a lunchtime stop there. So pack a lunch and we're hoping that you can come by and see. We do have confirmation now. We've got two legislators at least who are going to be there. None other than Representative Jim Walsh, who pretty much he's the most active and I'd call him popular conservative legislator in the state. He fights the good fight. He's actually the sponsor of Informed Choice Washington's written bill, HB 1610, it's dead now from last session, but
we'll bring it back.
I think it's worthwhile. Yeah. Restoring trust in public health through consumer protection. So he'll be there, Phil Fortunato, senator from the Puget Sound area. Mm-hmm. And we'll also have, and Dr. Paul Thomas has agreed that he'll follow the bus all the way through to its last stop in Spokane, which I'll have Aaron tell us about in just a moment.
Oh, that's going to be fantastic. I wish I was going to be there. That's great. And then the stop in Seattle is pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So very excited. Seattleites, come out April 17th. At noon, at least, even if you weren't vaccine injured, you can come out and enjoy a rock and roll show with the Refusers. Really high quality band doing some great music. Don't know if they'll play one of my favorite songs called Eat the Bugs. But they have some political commentary built into their music, and it's pretty good. And they'll play from noon to one. And then we have, again, a great slate of speakers for the next 2 hours. We're going to have a couple of chiropractors. We'll feature Dr. Brenneman next week on the radio show. We've already had Sarah Kotlerman, and she's been on the show quite a few times. She'll speak. And then we'll have Dr. Paul Thomas and Dr. Brian Hooker, the author of that Backs on Backs book.
Oh, that's going to be fantastic. And then leads us to Aaron and the Spokane event.
Yes, I would just like to touch a little bit more on the testimonial side of this and encourage people to come and be part of history, because obviously the government isn't doing this, so it's up to the people. And that's why this is the people's study. And so, you know, to be brave and to come and give your testimony and to be part of history and to don't let it to just slip away with time. So that's my big encouragement here, is to encourage people to come and to give their stories, because if we don't collect these now, then who will do it later? So that's a big part.
And then, remind viewers how you need to sign up in advance, because there's only so many 15-minute slots to
make
be
it a little less intimidating. It's a 15-minute slot. You're on the bus behind closed doors with Polly Tomy and then the film crew. So it's an intimate setting for you. And, you know, it won't be in front of a huge audience. And so I think, you know, I've talked to a lot of people here in Spokane and they haven't committed to me yet because I think they're just still afraid. So I just want to encourage people to be brave and to come and to know that this is for you, and to it will be a calm and collected scene for you to come and do that in.
It is streamed with to CHD TV. They are collecting, they are recording these stories.
Yeah, but it won't be in front of an audience, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. And she does make it very comfortable.
Yeah,
right?
Nice to talk to.
It really is a big deal, and we acknowledge that, and we acknowledge it does take courage to tell your story. Mm-hmm. But everybody that I personally have experienced who shared their story felt so good about doing it. They might have been nervous to do it, but once done, it was so cathartic. And then they felt like they were at least doing something to help make changes for the future.
Yes.
So you do, it helps you move forward if you've experienced it, and it benefits others who will potentially avoid the harm you experienced or that your loved one experienced. So Bob, how do people sign up for any of the locations to tell their story?
The main way is just go to childrenshealthdefense.org. And on that site, there'll be a people study tab.
Okay.
And look for the people study anywhere on the Children's Health Defense websites. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a contact us. Don't sign up for the newsletter on that page. Just look for it. Contact us to be a part of the study. And then you'll fill out a quick little, some contact info and a quick summary of your story. And then we'll get you scheduled.
Is that link currently on the CHD Washington website, the link to that?
Right, right. So in the Washington Children's Health Defense website, we do have a link back to the Nationals page.
So that might be easier for folks to remember if you just go to wa.childrenshealthdefense.org and then look for these events, and all the links you need to go sign up will be right there.
And even shorter, childrenshd.org works.
I love that. That's good.
And I would just like to reiterate that this is not just the COVID vaccine. This is all vaccines, any childhood vaccine, any military vaccine, any vaccine. So don't think that it's just for COVID.
And remdesivir injury, hospital protocol, injury or death stories.
I will be sharing my testimony of my dad's testimony for COVID protocols.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry that your family experienced that, Aaron.
Thank you.
And so thank you for that. So that's the main focus, of course, of these events. But surrounding them, there's some great things being planned. So what's going on in Spokane?
Yeah, so here in Spokane, we have four great guest speakers coming. One of them is Dr. Scott Jensen. He is a senator out of Minnesota, and he was kind of one of the they changed the birth certificates and they put COVID to be at the top of those. And they kind of did it secretly behind the scenes where not many people knew that this was happening. So he did a FOIA request to get that information. And he's been challenging the deaths that they've been putting. You know, people have died in a motorcycle accident. So instead of saying they died from COVID, they actually died with COVID. And okay. the birth certificates were saying that they died from COVID.
Death certificates. You said death. Birth.
So. Sorry, death certificates. <okay. laughs> Death certificates.
See, you're such a pro. You're such you just want life and birth and happy energy, but we're talking about the death. So.
yes. So he is challenging those and bringing that to light. So the numbers that we were all used to be feared with, the count, the number on the screen of the TV that they were sharing with us, scaring us with all those numbers, they have been skewed. And so he's been bringing that to the forefront. And Bob mentioned that we're having Dr. Paul Thomas, and Dr. Paul Thomas is the doctor who they used his patients of to do the vax versus unvaccinated study. And I'm excited because we had Dr. James Lyons-Weiler here about 4 years ago, and he presented that study here in Spokane. So now I'm excited to meet Dr. Paul Thomas. And he was also persecuted during COVID, and they did remove his license, and it is still, they still haven't given it back to him, and they probably won't. So he is definitely a hero in our fight, and he has stood up along the way, and we are here to commend him.
Yeah. Doctor, I just want to say that Dr. Thomas has said that in a way he feels very liberated because he feels absolutely free to speak truth.
Oh, wonderful.
And he's got, a whole lifetime career knowledge behind him, as a pediatrician, everything experienced. And so, what he's doing now, and I can't, with the wind, I can't remember. There's a couple of websites that Dr. Paul has, and Paul, forgive me that I don't remember them off the top of my head, but he's out there giving great information to parents. And so sometimes you never know when you can be liberated by the most unexpected things, even the negative things we can turn to a positive. So I'm
He's excited to tell us about his latest venture is Kids First Forever.
Can I mention that? Yes.
Oh, thank you.
And so he's working with Dee Dee Hoover, and she's got a history in healthcare, and she'd like to, they're working together, and there is an upcoming book to be released. And so that'll all be announced when we get to talk with him.
Wonderful.
Yes. We also have Dr. Kelly Victory, she is one of the new board members on the Wellness Company with Dr. Corey and Dr. McCullough. And she's also been on a lot of the Dr. Drew podcasts, who he's waking up to. So she's going to be, I heard, a delight to hear, and we're excited to have her also.
Yeah, we had her on last week. We had her on the show. She was wonderful. Yeah.
Oh, great. Yes. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
And then we have our MC is Sean Needham, who is a local pharmacist here, and he was helping people here locally get ivermectin when COVID was happening.
Yeah, Sean was another one we've interviewed in the past. And what I love about that is, to hear from a pharmacist who gets the big picture of the corruption of the drug industry. And he hasn't given up his profession. He's just doing it ethically. Mm-hmm. And it's so it makes me feel like in that realm as well, that change is possible. It's a little concerning what's going on in the realm of, say, pharmacies, because here in Tennessee, a bill is passing that empowers pharmacists to prescribe to give certain things that they hadn't before, and it's broadening their scope of practice. And it just seems as if there's this move more and more to cut doctors and who practice the art of medicine out of the picture, to have, pretty soon there won't be any person between you and the drug industry wants you to take. So
we also have Dr. Jason Kinley, who's a local naturopath here. He's kind of a local hero for a lot of people in our world. And he was investigated for giving out exemptions. And he also did help a lot of people, including myself, when we had COVID here in Spokane.
Oh, that's wonderful that to have Dr. Jason Kindley. Yeah, he's been he's been standing up, speaking truth even before COVID. He was very brave.
He's been Olympia with us before, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you remember those days?
Yes, oh yeah.
Yeah, especially 2019, the famous measles inbreak in that small community that
yes, right.
So how can people see the speakers? Are they going to be at the bus, at the RV all day, or are they going to just be at a speaking event?
Sorry, Bob. So yes, this event is going, it's two events happening really. So the first event is the bus obviously coming. They will be here from 8 to 5 collecting stories again in 15 minute increments. And then from 4 to 6 in the same parking lot, there's a building that we are going to be having the guest speakers come and speak in. The tickets are $15. We have QR codes, and you can also go on to Children's Health Defense Law and get those there. And we're hoping to sell out that audience.
Okay. So yeah. So again, wa.childrenshd.org is where you would get the tickets to the bus event. Is that you're saying? And also links to sign up to tell your story.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for popping on. We're going to have Bob update us a bit on some initiatives to see where they are after legislative session has ended in Washington. You're welcome to hang out and listen. So Bob, why don't you go ahead and tell us about those six initiatives.
And as you'll recall, we've talked about it a few times on the show, and certainly it's some news probably doesn't get played in every media circuit. But six initiatives were signed by many hundreds of thousands of people to get them before the legislature or onto the ballot this fall. And so as the legislative session started out, I was somewhat surprised when the legislature agreed to hear three of those initiatives as they went through the session. And so I'll bring up just for us for some talking points here. One of the groups that, well, it is the main group that spearheaded the initiative process was Let's Go Washington and Brian Haywood. And so the three that did get heard, or I guess the right word is they got heard in legislature were no state income tax, and then a reasonable police pursuit initiative, and then parental notification. So those, all three of those went through committee, just like we would have for normal bills. And they went through both chambers. They went through the House, they went through Senate, and they were not revised, and they were taken in basically as written. And they did a lot of work beforehand to make sure that the code reviser and everything else would flow into the RCW, and then the WAC will get developed later from these.
And to, the parental notification, what was it notification of?
And that's the one that we might focus on the most here on Inform Life Radio is really just let the parents know what's going on in schools.
Okay.
And that's been passed. And for a lot of these, including the reasonable police pursuit, I was in the committee hearings for both of those, and they never called my names to testify. Mm-hmm. But the complaint from the other side was, well, these initiatives are already encoded in law. And they said something like 20% might be new. Mm. So that for the parental notification, maybe there's only 20% of new language that's not already covered or apply, I guess, addressed in existing law. They are going to have that 20% then baked in. And it just has to do with, what are my kids doing in school? There has been some momentum lately to basically let kids run wild in classrooms, and parents don't necessarily get to know about it. There's a lot with the pronouns, meaning kids can change their pronouns every day. They can try to go into trans moments in school. They can also go to these school-based health centers and not tell parents what they were up to or what they're getting prescribed in these school-based health centers. That wasn't touched. I was disappointed that that corner of the law wasn't touched, meaning the bill that was passed last year is still in place, where school-based health centers are going to follow their separate set of rules, where you still can kind of, as a parent, you might not get notified about what your child is doing in the school-based health centers. You might not know the medications that are being prescribed there.
I can't, it's so dangerous to know, not know what medications your child is on. It's just, how in the world are you going to help them when they begin to have the very frequent adverse reactions that some of these various drugs will cause? How can you possibly help them if you don't know they're taking them? But it passed. These three passed, and they are, did the governor sign them and they're now law, or do they not even need to be signed? They're just passed and they're now moving toward.
They're passed and we expect them to become law. I don't know if he's signed them yet, actually.
Okay. So it's a step in the right direction. Reclaiming some things that have been lost over the years regarding really rights, health, and safety. So that's right. Very good to see.
Let me just clear up the one thing about parental notification. I think the main thrust of that is really about the curriculum and understanding what curriculum is being shown and guaranteeing the parents' rights to be able to review that and be told when. And there's a more opt-out options built in as well when families can opt out. I wish that it would only be opt-in so that there would be positive indication that you want to hear, have your kids hear certain topics.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll take what we can get. And I applaud those who got those all the way through. And, you know, this is how the process begins. So there are three more that the legislature did not take up, but those then go on to be on the ballot. So tell us about those three.
Right. And so initiative 2117 is stop the hidden gas tax. You've noticed at least 50 cents per gallon was added just around, was it December of 2022, I think. And we've been enjoying highest prices in the country for about a year now. Mm-hmm. And so that's been, most all of these initiatives are completely bipartisan in terms of the people who have signed on to the initiatives and the people who would support these to be repealed or reversed. So the higher gas tax, it's just, it's a tax on the people and it doesn't paint a clear path toward whatever the environmental climate change principles that the leadership is currently trying to use and as their campaign aid.
Okay.
Repeal the capital gains tax. So we still have the possibility of any capital gains over $250,000, like a home sale. Sometimes people own their homes for a while and real estate's gone up a lot, but that's an income tax. We still say that's an income tax and that one's going to go to the people for their vote.
Okay.
And then opting out of the state-run long-term care coverage act. So people on the paycheck started getting deductions for long-term care, but the plan was underfunded at its outset and would be bankrupt when the first set of long-term care patients go in. And people need to be able to save for that on their own. They don't want a government-run program.
I was still there in Washington when that passed, and it's worse than useless, the amount of money that would come out of your paycheck, and then who could actually use it and how much you'd get back. It's absurd that it still exists, but at least they're taking measures to help people opt out of that program. That's good.
Yeah, I think most of these financial ones really just, it's mostly about redistribution of wealth. It's not really about solving a problem.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, that's fantastic overview. You're probably breathing a little bit lighter these days with session being over and, you know, lots of other things to be gearing up for. You know, with Informed Choice Washington now looks ahead. The next step that Informed Choice Washington will be doing, and then me here in Tennessee with the Tennessee Coalition, working in conjunction with Stand for Health Freedom, we're now helping distribute candidate survey guides, getting the health freedom stance of those running for office. So we do not endorse candidates ourselves, Informed Choice Washington or the coalition, but we do help gather the information so these guides can be created per state so that when you go to the polls, you know the health freedom stance of the people that you're voting for. And that's where the real change is going to come from. So that's kind of what we'll probably be gearing up to do next. So if anybody is new to you, check out StandForHealthFreedom.com. Check out that organization. Sign up for their free news blasts, and they tailor them specific to your state, as well as some national things that they've got going. Have we missed anything, Bob?
Well, is that it? Yeah, just remind people to sign up for our newsletter, and they'll be able to hear our weekly news, where you'll be reminded of upcoming vaccine advisory committees and departments of health, where you can be active and comment as a public person.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Bob. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. You've been listening to the Liberty Hour on Inform Life Radio on 1150 AM KKNW and CHD-TV. We'll see you all next week. Have a great one.
Are you suffering from a sinking feeling that the COVID-19 pandemic is being blown out of proportion and that nothing in the news is making any sense? If so, then there is a fact-based, science-driven news show designed just for you. My name is Del Bigtree, and I am the host of The High Wire, the world's most trusted news source in digital media when it comes to accurate, science-based reporting on the COVID-19 pandemic. From COVID-19 vaccine development to mask mandates, school shutdowns to job layoffs, The High Wire goes beyond providing you with the most accurate, evidence-based investigations. We send you links to the sources for all of our reporting so that you can further your own investigation and come to your own informed conclusions. High above the agenda-driven circus of mainstream media, we do not run. We do not hide from the truth. Instead, we walk the high wire. If you care about truth, then join us on Instagram, Twitter, Roku, and our website, thehighwire.com.
Informed Choice Washington is a nonprofit organization that advocates for healthy immunity, medical freedom, and fully informed medical consent. The right to make medical choices without coercion is fundamental to our civil liberties and a basic principle in all human rights declarations. To learn more, tune in each Friday from 3 to 5 p.m. to An Informed Life Radio and visit the website informedchoicewa.org. It's time to take a stand for medical freedom. Go to informedchoicewa.org. Today.
The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.